Welcome to the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast, hosted by the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter. I'm Dave Austin.
And I'm Kurt Frankum.
We hope you're all safe and healthy during this incredibly difficult time. We've been doing this podcast for about a year with our monthly luncheon speakers. And due to the crisis that we are currently in, we want to change it up a little bit. We're starting a new guest series called Voices of Light.
We know there are a lot of people suffering out there right now, whether it is physically, emotionally, or economically, and our hope is to bring you guests who can uplift, inspire, and have honest conversations with us. We plan to have these interviews on a regular basis, and hopefully this can help us all get through this together.
We're so grateful today to have with us somebody who needs no introduction, BYU sports commentator and director of broadcast media, Greg Wrubell. Greg, thanks for being here.
That's my pleasure to be with you guys. Thank you for inviting me.
Greg, I have to tell you that your name is well beloved in our home. We have the book the Johnny Harleen catch, and my son Britton decided to try and reenact exactly the way that you said caught for the touchdown, and he can't do it quite as well as you.
I'm not sure I could reenact it the same way. With all of the same vocal qualities that went along with that call, I went a little nuts, as you might have heard, and so
we all did. So
yeah, it was a once in a career moment, maybe, and then those are things that are done in the moment, and it's tough to try and do over, if you will. But it was certainly one of those highlights of my career for sure.
Greg, in that vein, can you tell us about some of your highlights? You've had the chance to call some amazing games. Obviously, not just for football, but especially for football and lots of other sports as well. Can you tell us about some of your highlights the time that you've been at BYU?
Well, Beck to Harleen is right near the top because of how it all went down, the venue of the game, the opponent, the score, the time, all the things that would go into something dramatic were involved in that play. So Beck to Harleen is always in the conversation of career highlights. But I don't know that I think enough about how things began for me and how much of a highlight that was in its own way. And I'm sure some are familiar with the story, but my first play-by-play experience came about as a result of something actually unfortunate. Paul James, my predecessor, had heart issues during the pregame of the BYU-Utah game of 1996. And he was being treated by paramedics during the pregame show for these heart issues he was having. And they really advised him, counseled him to leave the broadcast booth and get to a hospital. And he said, well, hey, this is the BYU-Utah game. I can't do that. So he stayed and called the game. And after the game ended and our broadcast ended, he did go to the hospital where they found multiple clogged arteries and said, you've got to have 6 bypasses ASAP. And so Paul James was sidelined for a time after heart bypass surgery. And with Paul not available, KSL, the broadcast rights holder at the time, turned to me as a fill-in. And I think Paul helped me in their decision. I was put in as a fill-in for Paul while he recovered. And during that time, back in the following winter of 1996, I was able to do a number of basketball games and my first ever football game, which was the 1996 WAC championship game between BYU and Wyoming, a dramatic overtime game in Las Vegas. That was my first ever football play-by-play experience. I didn't have play-by-play experience, guys, at any level prior to Paul having his heart issues. A lot of broadcasters kind of worked their way up the ladder. And I was serving my own apprenticeship as Paul James's sideline guy. I was on his crew for 9 years before he left BYU or left retired. So I had 9 years training with Paul as his sideline reporter. And it was in the midst of those 9 years that he had this issue and that I was kind of asked to fill his spot while he recovered. But I'd had no play-by-play experience before that. And so quite literally, the BYU-Utah game is on a Saturday. He has his surgery later that weekend. BYU's next basketball game early in the 96-97 season is at Washington on a Tuesday. So I flew to Seattle on that Monday and broadcast my first ever play-by-play game for BYU in that game at Washington that Tuesday night. And it was a game BYU literally lost by 50-plus points. They lost 95-44. And that was early in the 1-in-25 season. So that's how I got my initiation into play-by-play, was calling a lot of losses, one win. And then when Paul came back, he was able to take over, and he handled the home portion of the conference schedule. I handled the road portion of the conference schedule. And then, of course, all the games he missed while he was out. So that's how I got into it. And I guess reverting back to your original question, I'd have to look back on those early days and say those were really highlights for me. Even though what happened with Paul was sad, ultimately it was a happy outcome and he was recovering, but it gave me the opportunity to learn how to do what Paul did so well for so many years. And I never really knew until I was doing it that I could do it. I probably had doubts about my ability to be a play-by-play guy. I've run into enough people over the years who have said that was my dream, was to be the voice of the Cougars someday. But I grew up in Canada. This was not a part of my life until I got to BYU as a student. And then I became familiar with Paul James as a fan. Then I got to be his colleague. And then I got to do what he was doing. And it all kind of came together to where I might be able to do this if I can get better at it. And I was afforded the opportunity to get better at it. After that 96-97 season, Paul stepped away from basketball, kept doing football. And so then I became the basketball play-by-play broadcaster while he stayed at football. So we each had a role there for 4 or 5 seasons. And those seasons really allowed me to get more comfortable at the play-by-play duties and responsibilities, so that when he left the football broadcast booth, I may have been to the powers that be a more natural selection, a more natural option to replace Paul at that point. Had what happened with Paul not happened, and he had just retired when Lavelle retired in 2000, things might have been opened up to a nationwide search for his replacement, and I might not have been a natural option or a natural choice to replace Paul. So those years really offered me a unique and treasured opportunity to again, get better at the job. And so I do look back on those early days as personal highlights. But then, you know, when it comes to actual games, back to Harleen is right there. The Max Hall to Austin Collie game is right there. Andrew George in overtime. Funny how we're mentioning all these Utah games. they become career highlights. Pretty much most of Jimmer's career was a highlight for me to call. But, you know, the half-court game at Utah where he hits from half-court, setting the scoring record in Vegas at the conference tournament, getting to the Sweet 16, all of those contained, you know, highlight moments. And, you know, going back to that, the early days, if you will, my first full season as the basketball play-by-play announcer was 97-98, my first season with Mark Durant. We've been together ever since. But it was the end of that year that BYU kind of needed a minor miracle just to make it, just to qualify for the conference tournament. Because back in the day, not every team made it to the WAC tournament in Las Vegas, and BYU was playing in the WAC at the time. They had to go on the road and defeat New Mexico and UTEP just to make it to Las Vegas in Steve Cleveland's first season with Dave Rose on the bench, I might note. Mm-hmm. And New Mexico had a home court winning streak of 40-plus games. BYU was given no shot. BYU was a 7-win team going into that weekend. Well, as we all know, they beat New Mexico handily, ended that long winning streak, went to UTEP, won in triple overtime to get to the conference tournament. Yes, they bowed out early in Las Vegas, but that first year with Coach Cleve and Coach Rose and everyone else, it was such a grind. And just to get to the tournament meant something. And I really had an appreciation at that point for steps and progress. And yeah, it was a 9-win team, but wow, what a great 9-win team that was. What a special team that was, you know, to me, and I'm sure a lot of BYU fans. And so whether it's a 9-win team or close to a 30-win team or a 32-win team like Jimmer, you can find special stories in all of those seasons. And that's what I've tried to do over the years.
Yeah. And so, Greg, speaking of highlights from the past, I'm curious as far as highlights present day or even lowlights. You know, we talked to Coach Pope about this, that process of him announcing to the team that the remarkable season was ended early. I'm curious what that shut down as it impacted the sports, how you heard about it. And then any of the, just what your day-to-day experience has been like going through, obviously the basketball season, now through the football season.
Well, since you bring up Coach Pope and basketball, added to my list of career highlights are pretty much every win over Gonzaga. They've all kind of felt, epic in their own way, and never more so than this past year. Coach Pope's first year as BYU's head coach, the highest ranked team that BYU's ever defeated in the Marriott Center. And that kind of put the stamp, right, on BYU's resume to that point in the season. Everyone kind of knew they were a tournament team, but that win showed people that not only is that a tournament team, that's a team that can make some noise in the NCAA tournament. And you know, within a few games, we found ourselves in Las Vegas. BYU was one and done in Las Vegas. Wasn't their best outing against St. Mary's, but you still felt things will be okay because there's still the NCAA tournament to come and this team can really show itself. And we never got that chance. And there are so many, you know, lessons learned in what we saw transpire this past spring, whether they're about, you know, taking advantage of every opportunity when you have it or not taking anything for granted or enjoying the journey as much as the destination. All those things came into play when the tournament was taken away. And I had such a great time calling this past season with Coach Pope and the guys. And it just felt like it was culminating in something super special. And then to not have it, to this day, leaves a very empty and surreal feeling. And I'm sure Coach Pope, you know, described it very well and eloquently. But, you know, that's a loss that when you want to think about it and really kind of dwell on it, it's a hard one to take from an athletic perspective. I realized there were bigger picture elements involved and larger concerns than a tournament, but doing what we do, you know, we put a lot of energy, mental, physical, and otherwise into the fortunes of these teams we cover, and to not feel that there was ever closure is still a hard one. And I think things would have been really fun for a few weeks for Coach Pope, his team, and Cougar Nation, and I'll always look back on the 2019-20 season with equal measures of pride and happiness and kind of profound sadness for what we did not get to see. I mean, heaven knows, Yoli Childs and TJ Haas, they deserved, right, to go to the NCAA tournament finally as seniors. And I know there's a famous quote from the movie Unforgiven where Clint Eastwood's character says to Gene Hackman's character, you know, deserves got nothing to do with it. Who really deserves, you know, what they get or don't get. But if you felt that, you know, if anyone deserved a chance to shine in March Madness, it was this last year's BYU basketball team. And especially for TJ and Yoli, I really felt a lot of sadness. And we're hoping that this next team, the 2020-21 team, whether the season is, you know, 20, 25, 30, 35 games, who knows, that they get to kind of pick up where the last team left off and hopefully finish off in a way this last team did not get a chance to. That would be my hope. And I think they're good enough to probably do just that. The talent is there. We have to see how it all comes together.
Yeah, especially rub salt in the wound when ESPN's projections had BYU in the national championship game, or at least the Final Four.
Yeah, fun things could have happened. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of fun things. Greg, switching gears a little bit, you were blessed, it sounds like, with a wonderful father. What did you learn from your father? And in that vein, what can we do to be good dads?
Yeah, so I just lost my father here in the last month. He passed away late in August. In fact, it was 1 month ago today that he passed. And I was able to share on social media a little bit, and certainly, you know, during the services, a little more about what my dad meant to me professionally and personally. And the two are intertwined because many of our moments together as father and son, as a boy, involved sports. My dad was an avid curler. Of course, in Canada, curling's big. And my dad was on curling teams. And he would take me to the curling rink on Saturdays where I'd spend my afternoons. I wouldn't necessarily be watching his team because curling, as for a young boy, didn't make a ton of sense perhaps. But I got to be in the rink and I knew it was a sporting activity and I was involved around it. And that was a consistent weekly experience for me, was being with my dad at the curling rink. He was also the public address announcer for the hockey team in town. And so I'd go to many hockey games with him and sit in his broadcast, in his announcer booth, and watch him work the microphone. And that got me introduced to the notion of speaking into a mic. My dad did it so well, had a great voice for it. So we would be together at the hockey arena watching games. My dad was a manager of a fast pitch softball team. And we would spend summer nights at the ballpark and I'd watch his teams play as I'd scamper around to the concession booth and make myself entertained otherwise. He was then commissioner for that fast pitch league, which involved many cities across Canada, and he was involved there. And so there are a lot of sporting connections between me and my dad that kind of raised me to love sport. And I was an avid reader. I love stats. I love trivia. All those things kind of came together to where, you know, what generated in me was an interest in numbers and data and watching and listening. And I wasn't the best athlete. I played hockey like we all did up there in Little League Baseball, but I wasn't an exceptional athlete. So I gravitated away from participation and more into observation. And, you know, that's what I do now is I observe sports for a living and incorporate all those things I loved as a kid. The reading and the stats and the numbers all come into play with what I do now. But it all goes back to, you know, what my dad did that brought me along to love those things.
Yeah. And I'm curious, you know, from that observation standpoint, you know, that this podcast and the BYU Management Society focused on morals and ethics and leadership, you know, obviously those themes come out quite boldly on the player side in the relationship with the coaches, the rules and those things. Where have you seen it from your side of sports as far as moral and ethical leadership? Anything come to mind as far as how you've had to demonstrate those principles?
Well, I've been able to see those principles in action within the people that I cover, whether it's coaches, administrators, or athletes. I think I'm blessed and really fortunate to be working for an institution that has, you know, faith-based values that generate and promote that kind of leadership. It's a competitive and sometimes a gray area world in collegiate sports. So just how much you can get away with, you know, to be successful without maybe staying true to all of the principles that you know to be true. And I think, you know, where everybody's going to have their challenges and their foibles and nobody is espousing perfection here or anywhere, because there are many, many great schools with many, many great leaders in the head of programs. I think there's more of a concentrated effort to make sure everybody is operating the same way. It's been consistent for me. I've been so impressed by the student athletes that I've been able to cover and interview and get to know over the years, to all the many coaches and administrators that help to govern these programs. I've just felt confident. I've just felt confident and secure in the people, both leading programs, teams that is, and leading the program, the athletics program at BYU, and extends upward to the campus administration, presidents and vice presidents. It just feels like it's being done in as good a way as you can do it at this level. And it comes down to those individuals and how they've, you know, tried to live their lives. I sense it. I feel it. And I'm sure you do too. And Cougar Nation does as well.
Great. One of the things I've always appreciated about you is the hard work and the preparation that you put into your broadcast and in preparing every detail. How does that apply to us? And how important is hard work and preparation in what we do?
Well, I had a conversation one time with a former athletics administrator at BYU, a good friend of mine. And he was complimenting me on the weekend's broadcast. He's a wonderful man and very kind with his words and was just giving me a nice pat on the back for the broadcast of that weekend. And I was appreciative, but I dug a little deeper and wanted to know from him why he thought it was a good broadcast or why he thought I was a good broadcaster. And again, I probably don't feel as good about my own abilities as maybe he felt about them. But I wanted to know what he thought, you know, made a good broadcaster generally, whether it was me or anybody else. And he described to me three components that for him make a great play-by-play guy or girl. And I took these concepts and kind of refined them and kind of distilled out of them three P words. So I now call them the three P's of play-by-play. Mm-hmm. And while they apply to play-by-play broadcasting, they could apply to other areas of life. And I'll share the three P's with you, and maybe we can, you know, think together how it might apply in other arenas. Mm-hmm. But the first P is passion. Okay, you have to love what you're doing, or you have to have an interest in what you're doing. You have to have it come from the heart. You have to have people tell that when you are doing your job, it matters to you. There has to be some level of passion. And not every job we have instills in us the same level of passion, but hopefully we all have a passion to do that job well or to excel in that arena. Whether I was a busboy at the age of 16 in a restaurant back in Calgary, Alberta, or a play-by-play broadcaster now in my 20th season doing football, say at BYU, I do have a passion for the job. At BYU, it extends much deeper for me because I went to school here. This is my alma mater. And so when I get to call games for BYU, I'm calling games for my team. And listeners know how much BYU means to me. So there's passion for the school. There's passion for the programs. There's passion for the sports. And there's passion for my profession. I really want to be good at it and get better at it game by game, year by year. So the overriding first P of passion really is in my heart. And I hope it comes out for people and they can sense that when I'm calling games. So you got to have that. That's the first thing. The second one is a word you already mentioned, is preparation. The second P is preparation. It's just not possible to do this job well without having spent the days leading up to that game, drilling down on every facet of that contest, from BYU to the opponent, to the rules, to the stats, to the records, to the video work, to watching teams in games and practices, and just getting as much information as you can so that you are comfortable when you sit down in that broadcast booth and the headset goes on. Memorization is a huge part of preparation. Now, this applies more to me and my job than other things, but I do so much memorization every week so that when I sit down and those numbers I see on the field or on the court or on the pitch, they immediately trigger the name in my mind and I don't need to look down to my spotting boards to find out who that number applies to. It's in my head. So a lot of memorization, a lot of drills that way. Again, a lot of in-week observations of game and practice video, getting familiar with both teams and what they do and how they do it. That's huge. So, and preparation involves, as you guys know, a reading of rule books and media guides and press notes and so many different things. And social media can give you so many accounts to follow that help you in what you do. I have multiple interns working with me that can also provide input for me. So many ways to prepare for me for a game. But, there's a scripture that says, if you are prepared, you shall not fear. And I found that to be the case. I don't necessarily get nervous for games anymore or broadcasts. I'm excited. I'm curious. But I'm not nervous about how am I going to do, because I feel like I've prepared as well as I possibly can. The third P. So we have passion, preparation. And then the third P is presentation. How do I present everything that I've just talked about? How does my passion and preparation come across in the spoken word? How does the broadcast sound? How do I sound? My cadence, my style, my diction, my pronunciation, all of these things. Vocal quality is what it is. I have the voice I have. There are many, many broadcasters with much better voices that sound better on the air, but this is what I have. And whatever gift I've been given, I have to refine it to the extent that I can make it palatable and pleasing to the audience. And hopefully that's the case with Cougar Nation and BYU fans. And as we talked earlier, sometimes my voice will do crazy things if the play warrants it. And say a Beck to Harleen moment or a Mangum to Matthews at Nebraska moment happens, I might lose a little bit of my vocal pitch at times to the higher octaves, but that's part of it too. And I think fans can kind of cut me some slack occasionally and say, well, he's doing what we were doing. We were going nuts as well. So it happens that way. But presentation's a big, big part of it. And you have to, for better or worse, have a voice that appeals to people and doesn't do the opposite, doesn't turn them off or turn them away from the broadcast. There's probably a lot of people out there who have passion and could prepare as well as anybody, but for whatever reason, the presentation's just not there. Whether it's projection, whether it's vocal timbre, whatever it is, it may not be there. If it's not there, it's hard to present the full package. And similarly, you can have a great voice and you can love what you're doing, but if you don't prepare and just wing it every week, you're probably going to let the listeners down at some point. And conversely, you can prepare really well and have a great voice, but if you just don't care enough, if it's not really in your heart, that's going to show up as well. And people will note the lack of that component as well. So I think all three are really essential to be a good, if not a great, play-by-play broadcaster. And there are probably elements of all those three things that I hope can translate to other areas of life as well.
Awesome. I love that. That's something that can, it's universal and can stick with any arena in which we perform. So as we wrap up, Greg, I'm just curious, it may be a few weeks till we publish this episode, but give us your analysis on the rest of the season. I mean, as a season ticket holder and someone who's gone to BYU football games for years, I sort of feel like, man, is this team as good as we see it, or is it just the circumstance that maybe the league isn't up to par and they're performing well? But how do you see it?
So we're talking football right now primarily?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Well, first of all, and again, I guess it depends on when this actually does hit the air. But as we speak today, we're looking at the first two games being played home games, at least without fans, and that's unfortunate. And we hope that conditions improve to where the fans will be reintroduced into Lavelle Edwards Stadium. We can have more what feels like, fall football, and we're not there yet. This team, as good as it is talent-wise, we still, wonder what this team would have looked like with Matt Bushman, with some running backs who've left the program through injury or otherwise. They've already taken some depth hits, right? And that's on, Jackson McChesney going out for the season. They've already had some things happen that aren't necessarily optimal, but I think it's still a really, really, really full cupboard, and there's a strong talent base there. And the tight end may not be featured as prominently moving forward without Matt, but we saw that there are other options and other targets that can produce. And as we speak now, BYU will have played only the one game, but that one game showed us a lot of potential for a first game of the year, going across the country, and having survived COVID protocols just to get to that game. 55-3 in the opener was pretty impressive. A lot of teams would like to be that sharp in game one. And of course, we hope that, there's improvement for game, two and three and beyond. And as to what the season looks like, who knows? We're looking at, Houston, which is a few games down the road at this point, and Houston's still waiting to play a game. Every game they've had scheduled this year has been called off. And some of them, 1, 2, 3 days before the game, it gets taken away. So we just don't have a real feel for how many games BYU will get to play this year. As we speak, there are eight scheduled. It's a pretty full October on tap, 5 games in 5 weeks in October, and the crossing finger component comes in to hopefully they get to play them all. But I think if BYU plays, a schedule that contains anywhere from 7 to 10 games, there's no reason BYU wouldn't be favored to win most, if not all, of those games. And as I look at what this schedule of the season might, turn out to be, I'm left with this thought. If BYU can just, win the games it's supposed to win and get on some kind of roll and be an undefeated team into October, this could be a team that creates and generates conversation that we haven't heard for a while. It would be great to have BYU, no matter the surroundings of this season, it'd be great to have BYU be a conversation point into October, into November, where people are talking about this special team. The schedule is what it is, but people will have to know that BYU did the best it could with the situation it was handed. The whole schedule went away, essentially. They had to cobble it together from scratch. They've been trying to do that. And the P5s weren't necessarily willing to involve BYU in their schedules either. So the Cougs are doing what they can right now with what they've been given. And I think people will realize that. And if that's the case and BYU can be an undefeated team into the latter reaches of the season, folks will be talking about Cougar football, which would be great. And the fact that they get to play, so some late night games, some ESPN games, they're the only Western team at this point. Things could come out online if Pac-12s and others and Mountain West come back in. But right now, they're the only team playing football. That's a unique opportunity to have some singular attention on what I think can be a pretty special team.
Greg, I know we're out of time. But I wanted to ask you one last question. This is the Voices of Light podcast. I'm just curious, we're going through some really difficult times in our country right now. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts around what our nation needs for healing right now. What things can we do as individuals to help lift each other up, and any thoughts around that?
Well, I do believe that whatever good can be brought forth, whatever qualities of light can shine forth, are generated in our hearts and our homes. And we're all born with pure hearts. We have to unlearn that purity. We have to have it taken away from us in measures, because everyone has a good heart I believe that. That the natural state of man, I think is good. I think is kind and decent. And it's sad what happens to certain hearts over time. And a lot of what happens to hearts is because of what happens in homes. And not everyone is given the same opportunity to nourish their heart in their home. But those who have the opportunity should be so grateful and feel blessed that if in their homes light is being taught and light is being cultivated and light is being brought forth, well, that's all we need in our world, our homes with pure hearts and homes where light can be generated. And I just have felt that the home can be such a sacred place and such a special place from which the inhabitants can go forth and share with others what they've learned within those four walls. And so I would just say, to all of us, you know, do what we can to make our homes, true sources of light, so that hearts can stay pure and hearts can stay good and hearts can stay kind and understanding. And that I really think that the only true unity comes when we all believe, or as many of us that want to can believe, that we are, divine in our origin. And that's what unites us. The human family is the true unity. It's not so much about the divisions you can find in every facet of society. It's about a divine origin that truly makes us one. And I think until we all start really believing that we are bound that way, we may not get as much light as we desire.
That's incredible. Greg, we sure appreciate you. Thank you so much for your time today and for your example, both on the air and off the air. We appreciate you.
Well, you're very kind, Dave. And Kurt, thank you as well. It's been fun to talk with you guys today and share some thoughts. I love what I do. I love that I get to do it for BYU and for Cougar Nation. I've been so incredibly blessed to do it as long as I've done, and I'm just feeling very, very happy to be in this position and in a position to chat with you about things we've talked about today. So thank you.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you to all of our listeners. We'll be back again next week with another episode of Voices of Light.